Welcome, listeners, to Biz Culture Matters. We are back. We're glad you're here, and it is Wednesday, April 10th. Is today the 10th?
Today is the 10th.
It is the 10th, Wednesday, April 10th, and I'm looking at the calendar. That's why you can't hear me into the microphone. Steve, what a show last week with Jack Aulis. Was that not incredible?
What a leader. I mean, former C-suite executive that ran the Scion division. Did he say 10 years, the Scion division at Toyota? 10 years, 5 years?
Something like that. A long time.
Formerly the assistant to the president at Toyota, and some of the most fabulous ideas on how to build a high-performance culture and how to change a culture and how to recognize the symptoms of a culture that's starting to get ugly, but it's not there yet. Brilliant guy. You know, listeners, if you didn't hear that show, make sure you catch it at excellentcultures.com/podcast or subscribe, to it on the iTunes podcast, because that is one of the best leadership perspectives on culture that we've ever heard.
It was great. Jack Aulis is one of our favorites, former Cincinnati Reds center fielder, and then his most recent position was the with the vice president of
Vice president of the marketing division at Toyota.
Well, that's what he is now.
Yeah, but before
he was the VP and the GM of Scion, the whole Scion division, is the hip hop awesome, hip hop anonymous Toyota product. I like the Scions.
They're
really
great little cars.
But this week we're excited because by the way, I was going to say too that just on iTunes you can just search Biz Culture Matters. We're the only one that pops up. And we'll be excited to have you listen and subscribe there. Also, too, we're going to focus today's show on how to change your culture. How do you change? How do you diagnose? How do you even know if you need to change your culture? Excellent Cultures has 36 years of experience, and we're excited to talk about that today. So make sure you have handy the email, asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com, because we'll just carry this conversation back on with you right away. Real-time answers, just email asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com. Are we toting that we're the experts when we have an email that says ask the experts?
I don't know. We got a bunch of experts that work with us and our colleagues. We had a great expert on last week that Jack Aulis from Toyota taught us a lot. We learned so much from our clients and their experiences and what works and what doesn't work, and how do you develop best practices out of all of the experience of great leaders like Jack and the Toyota company.
Yeah, and we have amazing people on our advisory board that are ready to talk to you too as well. I mean, we should talk about those for a second before we jump into the show. Guys like Charles Oglesby,
Charles Oglesby, former Fortune 500 CEO and chairman. Great guy, great leader, Dr. Rob McKenna from over at Seattle Pacific University, industrial organizational psychologist, young guy in his 40s with an MBA in business and a PhD in psychology. Denise Mills, frequent visitor, to the First Lady at the White House, Woman Entrepreneur of the Year. Doreen Leckler, young dynamic mom, cancer survivor, when they told her that she was basically dead with stage 4, and now the doctors are scratching their heads figuring out what in the world happened. This has got to be a miracle. Dale Hintz, seasoned leader, coach
like
of thousands of executive coaches. I mean, we've got some great team members. Denny Clements, former senior exec, vice president of the Lexus division of Toyota that we had the good fortune of working with for some, 25 years during his career at Toyota. So, we've got great resources and great folks that are just really smart, really wise. They've been there and they've done that. And we learn so much from our team as well as from our clients that everybody should pay a listen to when they're looking at increasing the performance of their people and their organization and their culture. That's why we post the free podcast. So
Absolutely.
Folks can learn how and not make the same mistakes that everybody else has made for years. In fact, one of the things that one of the Toyota execs taught us one time that he got from one of their famous Japanese national CEOs was that good people learn from their mistakes. Great people learn from the mistakes that others And our goal at Excellent Cultures is to help you guys be able to learn from our mistakes and the mistakes of others so you don't have to make them yourself.
Yeah, and transparency is something we value highly and are excited about that. So go ahead, email us. You can email Ask the Experts. We can say that we have experts in our back pocket on the team that are excited to help you and engage conversation with you and helping you lead your business and move on forward to the next level. We're excited about that. Today's show, Steve, how to change the culture. That's today's show. Anything you want to highlight before we go into this?
Well, first, you've got to figure out whether or not a culture is something that you want to change. And most typically, the vast majority of leaders who come to us that want to change their culture don't come because they have a problem. They come because they have an like Jack Hollis last week, you know, didn't call Excellent Cultures because he had a culture problem in the Scion division of Toyota. He called because he had an excellent culture and he wanted to take it to the next level. And number one reason to want to change your culture is if you're great and you want to get better.
Yeah.
And if you think you're great and you don't want to get better, then that's the first symptom of an inferior culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And some people are realizing culture. What is that? Culture is the root of every issue that we deal with, right?
Every business problem, every business solution is rooted in culture.
In culture. And every one of us is a builder of culture either by habit or by design. Either by accident or by design. It's happening all the time.
And it's usually by accident.
It's usually by accident, exactly. How many years has Excellent Cultures been helping businesses?
36 now.
36 years of experience. What are some of the symptoms, I think, as we go in to the show today, Steve, in our first segment here? Let's spend the first segment on dealing with how do I know that I've got culture issues and I've got stuff we need to change. So what are some of the symptoms that I need to make a culture change that will show me that I need to make it without a diet, you can't throw a cure without a diagnosis.
Yeah.
Well, so what's the diagnosis?
I made this big long list last week when you told me you wanted to ask that question, but then we had the show with Jack Hollis last week just after you asked me that question, and he came up with three great answers that made mine look pale by comparison.
Right.
And what Jack shared with us, and by the way, like I said, if you didn't catch that show, if you don't catch any at all, get the podcast. It's free. Excellentcultures.com/podcast for April the 3rd, 2013.
Yeah.
Great show, Jack Hollis from Toyota. So what Jack told us was that the first symptom that you have culture problems is if you hear people thinking about, talking about, acting like the what about me mindset. And these things start very, very small and very, very innocent. But what Jack taught us, and we found it so true in our 36 years of experience and all of the data we've gathered from the scientists that we've engaged at Excellent Cultures, is that, you know, entitlement mentalities are human nature. You know, human beings naturally think, what about me and what's in it for me and what can I get out of it, you know, as a part of the way that we are. And what Jack just told us is that if you've got people in your organization, in your business, in your culture that are overly focused on what about me, that's the first symptom of a bad culture. So if you've heard anybody acting like, thinking like, talking like, what about me in your organization, you've got culture challenges going on. You just don't know it yet.
Right.
And like we said the last time we talked about culture, it's kind of like acne. I mean, it's all of the increments of chemicals and issues and age and hormones and all the stuff below the surface that's going on that cause it. The second thing that Jack told us is that fuzzy priorities. If your people are not crystal clear on what it is you're working on accomplishing, and this isn't the mission statement. I think the last time we talked about culture on the show from a what does Excellent Cultures know about culture perspective, I shared that in all of our 36 years, I've never met one CEO who could recite their mission statement. So it's not about what the mission statement is or what the values are. It's about what people carry around in their hearts and their minds every day, or what they perceive the priorities are. And if there's any fuzziness at all in those priorities, what Jack told us was, you know, you've got a culture problem. You just don't know it yet.
Right, exactly.
And then the third thing that he told us that was the big one, And it's the one that, like I said, is hardest to identify and so below the surface in snow, so sneaky, because typically it's the leader that's the last one to know this stuff. But if you have any fear or delay in people speaking candidly about their opinions or feelings, Jack told us, you've really got a culture problem. And again, I mean, we have so many, and really the larger your organization, the more that we see that one seem to happen, that, you know, people for fear of losing their jobs or fear of an authoritative leader or fear of who knows what they're afraid of, or for any number of other reasons, if people are not in an environment where they are passionate and ready and eager to share their opinions or feelings, even if they disagree with the boss. In fact, that's the best time to share an opinion and do it in a healthy way. Then, according to Jack Hollis at Toyota, you got a culture problem. You know, and then these things all manifest in, you know, lack of a true collective passion for excellence, underperforming people, rapid change in a structure like a merger or an acquisition, lack of follow-through on commitments made by people, people giving up accountability, HR issues stemming from certain leaders, shallow communication, turnover, low sales, sneaky politics going on, low motivation levels, lack of quality, people head nodding and smiling to leadership rather than confronting issues and decisions that they disagree with, like Jack told us. I mean, those are just a few of the symptoms of a culture that is underperforming and not taking advantage of all the resources that you have in your organization, both people resources and financial resources and brands and infrastructure. That'll kill it.
There you go. All right, folks, you've got a list of symptoms. You've had the diagnosis. Stay tuned for the cure. We'll be right back. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM, your conversation station.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
We're back. Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. Today we're talking about changing your culture. How do you change your culture? Our first segment of the show was straight diagnosis. How do you know that you have culture issues? We had the what about me syndrome. Steve was the first one. We start seeing team members, people having the what about me syndrome, a bit of human nature, but if it's overtaking a culture, you got problems. Fuzzy priorities. Third one was fear or delay in speaking candidly about their opinion and feelings. People don't want to be transparent. They don't feel safe. They don't feel listened to. And then lastly, collectively, a lack of true collective passion for excellence in the company. People enjoying what they're doing, enjoying the family and the team member atmosphere of the culture. And now it's time for the cure, Steve.
Well, let me say just before we get after talking about the cure, Stephen Collins taught us in his best-selling book, you know, his best-selling books, you know, especially Good to Great, that the, in his estimation, based on his research, that it was easier to take a terrible organization to greatness than it was a good one.
Yeah.
Because the human nature of organizations that are good is to let down, to lose their edge, to kind of get sloppy and lazy. And so I would add one more symptom. If you have a good culture and you believe you have a good culture and your people think you have a good culture, and if you're even, you know, proud of your good culture, you got a culture problem.
Yeah.
You really do.
Yeah, the blinders. The blinders are on, the perfect blinders. No, that's huge. That's very, very attuned.
You've got the acne. It just hasn't surfaced.
Well, I mean, exactly. It works that way with our own health sometimes. We avoid. Something's going on. We can feel it. We can feel the knee pain. I don't want to go to the doctor because I might find out what's really going on. So that's the challenge. All right. So once I recognize the culture I've developed or built, whether on purpose or by accident, needs a change. I see the diagnosis is in the negative. What's the most important first step for me as a leader to take?
Get help. You know, get help. You know, you don't, if you're playing softball and you break your leg sliding into second base, you don't try to fix it yourself. I mean, you know, if you're smart, I mean, you go to the ER or find somebody who's an expert in fixing broken legs, who has the experience and the expertise and the tools and the technology, and then this day and time, especially the science.
Yeah.
I mean, any doctor that, you know, knows what they're doing is going to do a preliminary examination, then they're going to get an X-ray and maybe an MRI and even go deeper than that with pathology. And culture is about the living organism called your organization or your team that is almost so similar to the living organism called the human body that, you know, I don't know why we haven't figured that out yet. You know, step one, get help, and get help that is expert, that has lots of years of experience, that has clients that have shared the specific outcomes. I mean, get case studies on what worked and what didn't work, and make sure that the science is valid and it's not driven by subjective opinion or warm and fuzzy conversation, but driven by genuine data that is based in science and valid and accurate and can tell you what the depth of your challenge really is.
But it's like, I mean, you're talking to leaders here. Seriously, like we got ourselves into this ditch. This is a leader mentality. I can get myself out of it. I mean, great. Awesome sales pitch, Steve. That was wonderful. Go to get diagnosis. We've got a doctor thing. But really, why go get help? I mean, that's, we've got the basic scientific tools, and probably more so the reality is we each have our own blinders that unless we get other people on board, we don't see it.
Yeah, well, human beings are famous for not seeing the trees in their own forest.
Right.
And all an organization or a business or a team is a whole collection of human beings who can't see the trees in their own forest.
Right.
So that's why, you know, when you have a stomach pain and it doesn't go away, you go to the doctor and they start using their scientific tools and instruments to look deeper and identify what's really going on below the surface. It's not just, oh, I think I have a tummy ache. After 3 days, you better go make sure you don't have an appendectomy that's about ready to happen without a doctor.
Yeah, we don't see our own stuff. I think that's the reality. We can look in the mirror and look right past it because we see what we want to see.
Absolutely. Well, we see what we want to see. We see what we like. We see what we enjoy. We see what we're proud of, and that's the truth, and that's the problem.
And we avoid the stuff we're not.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the human nature. All right, so, I mean, we all know change can be difficult and often impossible without crisis. In fact, we hear scientific stats that humans don't change unless crisis causes it. We all know the people, and we've got family included. Your mother, my grandmother, died of lung cancer at a young age of 50. She smoked for years. And of course the doctor verdict was out, smoking causes cancer.
Yeah. Well,
but until the crisis hits, human nature often doesn't
change. Yeah, you don't
change.
Realize it, you know, and I mean, you know, that's what cancer causes and that's what causes cancer.
Yeah. So how do we instill change in leaders and teams when that can often be so difficult and it demands crisis for people to change? So how do we instill the change?
Well, you know, the first step is of course leadership who recognizes that they have blinders on and they can't see the trees in their own forest. And, you know, the first sign is if you think you're really great and you're really successful and you've had several years of success, that's the best time to start looking because that's when things start to go the other way and pop up and move in the wrong direction. And, you know, our the step one in our process at Excellent Cultures that, and by the way, this process was developed out of 36 years of scientific research and data, engaging the finest scientists in the world who have proven with their data and their experience and their experiments, not just trial and error, but here's what always works, or here's what we can count on, and here's what we can expect. But then, you know, compiling that with business leaders who are capable of slapping the academics and the scientific jargon out of scientific tools and putting them in real business language that business leaders can identify with. So if it's not data-driven, then, you know, you run the risk of wasting a lot of money on a problem or a consultant or a team that produces shallow results or results that are not sustainable. I mean, right. I was actually with a Fortune 500 client this week, day before yesterday, and listening, you know, to other folks who were touted culture experts, culture change experts, if you will, talk about, you know, the importance of getting, you know, little incremental wins. I was so glad they said that because when it was time for my presentation, you know, I started out with, if you're looking for gradual incremental, you know, quick wins, then don't waste your time. Because changing cultures are about huge, you know, sweeping transformations that start out with a little incremental insight into what's going on, and then a change that results in a huge win,
right,
that it many times reflected by millions of dollars in cost savings or revenue.
So how do we instill the change in leaders and teams?
Well,
just basic, easy, how do we do it?
How do we start? You know, the first step in the process is you measure it and benchmark it with the data, and then use that data to build a buy-in among the leadership team.
Right.
Everybody's involved in, you know, it's kind of like people go on a diet all the time, but imagine what it would be to go on a diet and never look at the scale. So people have got to be on the same page in terms of the desired outcome that they want to finish with, but the desired outcome can't just be warm and fuzzy words. It's got to be numbers, scientific data that defines the elements of the culture.
Well, and what you're talking about is change. I mean, every leader knows change isn't going to happen alone. So we got to go about recruiting those within our team, the culture changers, to take on the task with me, to take on the risk with me. How do we do that?
I would say don't recruit the culture changers, create them. I mean, Peter Drucker, the father of management who has passed years ago, is known for being, you know, not just the father of management, but the father of the best tweets about management. And he passed away, I think, before Twitter was invented. But I mean, our two favorite Peter Drucker sayings, you know, his tweets are that culture eats strategy for breakfast, and the best way to determine your future is to create it. I mean, you've got to have the right expertise in place to use the data to build a consensus about what you want and the outcomes that you're looking at among your leadership team, and have a true buy-in on the end result that you're looking to achieve in the ideal culture that your people are seeking. And then you start benchmarking it against, you know, the current reality of where are we.
Right.
And when you look at, when you've got a passionate, committed buy-in and a team of people and a team of leaders who are frustrated enough with all the stuff that's gone on that they felt slow them down for years, but they never knew what it was.
Right.
And now the MRI, you know, the biz culture MRI shows them, you know, what's going on. They get pretty excited about wanting to address those changes once they find out that these things are at the root of every project they've ever had that got stuck.
Right. So how I mean, obviously, but I'm going to ask this question anyways, how important is transparency to the process?
Well, it's everything. But I mean, once again, human beings are not naturally transparent. You know, people don't grow up, you know, wanting to raise their hand and talk about their dirty laundry in public and embarrass themselves.
Right.
Yet,
or risk losing their job, their position.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, that's an attribute and a trait of leadership that needs to be learned. And once again, you know, in our process, step two in our process is about changing the way that leaders lead. You know, we live and work in an environment where the smartest people in the world, the folks at Gallup, tell us that in North America, 71% of our North American workforce are effectively disengaged in their jobs. People come to work every day just to pass the time, get a paycheck, then go home and do what they really want to do in their life. The experts at the Harvard Business School tell us, based on their data and research, that 70% of all business change initiatives, by the way, that's in the London Business School as well, 70% of all business change initiatives fail to deliver the desired results. Most common cause is insufficient focus on people. Most common reason is human beings resist change. Additionally, the experts in leadership at the University of Michigan tell us that 70% of all leaders who lead people lead in a manner that produces defensive or negative behavior. So if you're speaking to a group of leaders in your firm, you know, start the meeting with, give me a show of hands of everyone who's leading their people in a manner that produces just the opposite of what you want. Nobody will raise their hand. That's the truth, and that's the problem. But in fact, 7 out of 10 leaders are leading in a manner that creates opposite behavior. They don't know they're doing it, and they don't know what to do to change it.
So transparency's
it's everything.
There, it's everything.
It's everything.
Well, a lot of you guys know in your businesses and companies that it's hard to get that out of people. Next segment, as we're going into commercial, how do we get it out of it? How do we bring and breed the transparency to have it? You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at ExcellentCultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
We're back on Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. Today we are talking about how to change your culture, your business culture, your work environment. And we were just getting into the nitty-gritty there, Steve, of culture change doesn't happen without transparency. Transparency with people's fear of losing their job or fear of losing their position or fear of embarrassment or fear of whatever. I love how you addressed early on that within the heart of all your people, clearly they know the serious issues that are going on. Many of them have kept quiet over the years. And so when the conversation begins to start happening, it begins to come out of their heart. There begins to become enjoyment. But how does Excellent Culture specifically get the transparency out of the individuals?
Well, we use the data tools. We use the Biz Culture MRI tools, which are science-based, much in the same way that a diet coach would coach someone who has a goal to lose weight. You start out by getting on the scale, and you look at the numbers and define, where am I relative to my goal? Only in this case, the scientific tool doesn't measure, you know, what your body fat content is or how much you weigh versus what you want to weigh. It measures the core elements that create a culture. I mean, the 4 ideal outcomes that every business leader is after creating in an excellent culture, you know, are pretty simple. They want people who set and achieve goals every day.
Right.
They want people who believe that they have unlimited potential and they are be all that they can be.
And these tools that you're talking about, they're anonymous?
Yeah.
How are they taken?
Typically, they're taken online anonymously so that people can take them without fear and tell the truth. And the great news about the science behind this is it's been around so long, it's been done so many times, and the software is so perfected that people could even try to lie to it, and it identifies the lies and filters that into the data.
How is that presented then to the leaders of the organization?
Well, it's basically presented to the leaders in the context of what they've defined as the outcome that they're looking for. And I mean, once you can talk to people in a safe environment, and we typically like to do it with, you know, starting with confidential anonymous interviews where, you know, senior leaders have the opportunity to tell the good, the bad, and the ugly to a third party under the, you know, the bridge of anonymity, and then use that to identify the desired outcome that they're looking for as well as the obstacles that are in the way.
Yeah.
Then you validate that with data that proves that these are the root causes of, you know, what's going on that they want to change and they need to change. And typically they don't need to change it, or they don't know they need to change it until they find out what it is.
Right.
But I mean, when you look at those four key elements of people setting and achieving goals, working towards being all that they can be, or let's call it the continuous improvement mindset, you know, pulling together as a team as opposed to in silos. When there's a crisis, they run to huddles instead of silos, and caring about, you know, each other as fellow human beings above and beyond. I mean, we heard Jack Hollis tell us on the show last week that a key element in the high performance cultures he's built, it's always been based upon how can I help my teammate is more important than how can I help myself.
Right.
And those four key elements are critical to any successful high performing team. And then there's about eight that are derailers or detractors that we don't have time to talk about today, but you can sure find out, or even, you know, go online for free and take the Biz Culture MRI at excellentcultures.com, the free version, and in 7 minutes you can tell very quickly how your biz culture measures up against the best in the world.
Right. So here's where we've gone so far, just so the listeners are clear and I'm clear. We've addressed number one, that in order to change your culture, you need a diagnosis. We need to diagnose the problem. We call that measure and benchmark.
Yeah,
we have
to be able to do numbers that are scientifically valid.
Right. Not touchy-feely, not ooey-gooey, not some guru's intuition, but numbers that show up. I mean, numbers don't lie. People lie,
well,
but numbers don't
lie. One of our brilliant clients said it very succinctly years ago, a guy by the name of Bob Burden. You know, Steve, I see what you're saying here, he said, because people can lie about numbers, but numbers never lie about people.
There you go. So the first process, diagnose. With numbers, with data. Second is we're changing how leaders lead. We get the transparency out through the diagnosis, and we're changing how leaders lead intrinsically from the heart, which means it's not outwardly enforced. We're drawing out of something within the inside of humanity. Want to call it psychology. It's not spiritual wishy-washy. It's psychological truths that every human functions. It's science. I love that. That's the key thing, is it's science. And we're changing how leaders lead. But here's the third part, right? The next question a leader is going to ask is, how do I get everybody on board? Let's call him Stan.
Yeah.
We've got Stan, who's been in the company. He's been in the business. He's been in the organization for 30 years. Stan ain't moving. Stan's got a check. He's got retirement built up. Stan ain't going to change. But I'm not going to change Stan because it's going to wreck me. So what do I do? Like, how do I get everybody? How do I get employee engagement? Is it even possible to get everybody on board?
Well, let me start by saying something in defense of Stan first. The most recent surveys I've seen dealing with change, and you know, we all know that human beings resist change. You know, what's the greatest fear of an organ transplant physician in an organ transplant? It's rejection. I mean, our bodies are built to reject anything foreign. Our minds, our souls, our psyches are built to reject anything foreign. So human beings resist change. Most recent poll that I've seen is that the greatest fear of humankind is speaking in front of a group of people. Number two is change. Number three is death. Secondly, when I look at the deeper engagement polls, you know, we already talked about what Gallup taught us. When you ask people to identify to the confidential poll, not to their friends or their colleagues or their boss, their priorities in life. One poll I saw, job finished fifth. It was sixth on the other poll. So what are we saying? If your people are normal, effective, productive North American workers, then they have four or five things that are more important to them in their life that they're not telling their boss about, and they'd rather die than change. So how do we get folks engaged? We start out by talking to the key leaders in the organization about the outcomes that they want. And I mean, our operative question is, if you could create a culture that was so exciting that everybody in the place woke up 2 hours early every day and could hardly wait to get to work, what would that look like? And it's amazing the kind of answers you get from people, you know, under the auspices of data tools online that, protect an anonymity and then use that as a basis for, you know, confidential interviews that, you know, no one says who says what, but they know we're going to put it all together.
So you're saying it's possible to get employee engagement.
It's not possible. It's absolutely doable if you know what you're doing and the right process is right.
In 36 years, how many stands have you run across that wouldn't change that the company had to get rid of?
Zillions. Lost count. I mean, yeah. Just number the number of human beings, and we've all got something that we don't want to change, and we're going to resist change. And there's your key.
But what about free will? Are you talking about? What about the stands that have made it through the excellent cultures process?
Well,
still have zillions that the companies have had to move on from.
That have made it through the process, in the process of self-discovery, not preaching, not pushing, not teaching, not compensating or rewarding with money, although those elements, have an impact. Not group therapy. It's about, okay, Stan, tell us what you want.
Right.
And tell us honestly and candidly in a protected environment. And then weaving it together. Gosh, we've had projects with the United Auto Workers and General Motors plants where nobody agreed on anything, and you've got three generations of people hating people, bullets fired through living room windows of vice presidents of human resources. And so we asked the union leaders and the managers to identify, using our data tools, the culture that they wanted to leave to their children and grandchildren as a legacy, and it was the same culture.
Wow.
How about that for engagement?
Yeah.
Then the tough part is talking to them about, all right, now let's look at where we are relative to that, and let's go to work on making the changes that will make the difference.
Yeah. And there's been some great stories too, right, of the stands that have been moved into new positions within the company that actually started benefiting.
I call it the Goliath principle. Had one, just a few weeks ago. This is a billion-dollar privately held company. Got an executive who's been with the company for more than a dozen years, started out as a middle manager, worked his way up, had a reputation of being, extremely productive, but negative and very resistant to change, arrogant. I mean, those are the words that, his people and his colleagues spoke about him, but kind of hung around. I mean, and didn't want to change, thought the excellent cultures process was a lot of silly, stupid stuff. But once he identified through the data the outcome that he wanted to have by way of how his leadership caused his people to behave and saw the feedback, he's now and has become the strongest supporter and one of the most changed leaders I've ever met. So the more negative someone is or the more attached to something they are that they don't want to change, and they self-discover that change can not only be beneficial, but you can learn, once you learn how to do it, it's doable, they become the strongest supporters. Then you got to slow them down from evangelizing everybody.
Yeah. Then it becomes the movement that every company and organization and culture really wants.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's all based in engaging the free will of human beings.
Right.
If the people aren't doing it because they want to, it's not going to happen. And even if they want to, if it's not based on data and measurement that brings accountability into it, it's not going to happen.
And in 36 years of doing it, when we first engage companies in the process, obviously we've engaged the leaders and the C-suite guys first. As we move down, there is resistance at first, almost always.
Always.
And those people get turned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, some do, some don't.
Yeah.
Once you get through the process, and the key is a critical mass of people who self-discover by the connection between their own defined outcome with where they are currently and start making progress and changes happen, and it's a beneficial experience and everybody wins, you got a critical mass of folks that want to make it happen. Occasionally, you're going to run into some folks that no matter what, they don't want to change, and then pretty soon they become so uncomfortable in this excited, vibrant, excellent environment full of excellent seekers who raise their hand to be accountable instead of have to be told that I'm holding you accountable, that they can't stand working in this high-performance place anymore, and they go find some place to work that moans and groans and complains and gripes all the time.
Which leads us to our last segment. We're going to talk about sustainability. Everybody is all about these wonderful events, these wonderful hype fests that get people excited but don't sustain culture change in a business long term. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM, your conversation station. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about how to sustain the culture change. Be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
All right, everybody, we're back. Hope you enjoyed the break. Probably not, because you're ready to get going on to right now, the sustainability. We've talked, number one, how are we changing the culture? We have to diagnose it. Steve, you gave us scientific tools and numbers, not ooey-gooey feelings and stuff. We diagnose it through science, right?
Science, proven tools, and the tools have got to be able to interpret it in real-world business language, because a lot of scientific language just doesn't connect well with business leaders or real people.
There you go. And then you've got, we're changing through the science, we're changing how leaders lead. We're bringing on employee engagement. We're bringing people into the process. We're engaging them into the process of the culture change. And lastly, sustainability. This is the thing that nobody has selling points on, because everybody's into the big event, the biggest show, the big hype thing, the big passion. Well, passion wanes. Emotion goes away. How does this culture change, sustainability, how does it sustain over time? How do we not fall back into the old way of doing things?
Well, the whole process needs to be rooted in engaging the free will of the human beings who are involved. Everybody has something that they want to do better. It's different for most. And in most cases, based upon the data we shared with you earlier, it has more to do with areas outside of business than it does with business. And, you know, we all care about our families and our children and our loved ones more than we do our jobs. And in some places, it's politically incorrect to share that truth. But, in some work environments. But the bottom line is everybody has something that they have more potential to do than they're currently doing, that they would like to change if they could. But they just either don't know how to change or they don't believe it's possible.
Right.
And the great news about, you know, the field of sports psychology that has been applied so well to athletes, and, you know, we've got some sports psychologists on our team, that in sport, you know, almost any high-performance athlete, in fact, I would go as far to say as every high-performance athlete that's out there today, you know, are, in fact, engaging a sports psychologist to help them use the tools of cognitive psychology to make the changes that they want to make to increase their performance to a higher level. So that's an important piece of the puzzle of equipping the people in the organization to make the changes that they want to make. And it's got to be focused on what they want to change, which in many cases have nothing to do with business. Might
right.
be their golf game, might be their health, might be their third grader or 10-year-old's math class and how well they do in their math grades. But Once they get the tools to make change happen, implement it, and have success, now you've got an environment full of people who want to change, who will be receptive to coaching. And when you base the coaching on data and real measurement, and they can see how they're making progress based upon the numbers, great things happen. Now, that I would call that the foundation of sustainability. But ultimately, the sustainability factor has to flow into connecting with business systems and processes. Every business has systems and processes that were developed over the years to solve problems, get the product to the customer faster, increase quality, increase customer satisfaction. One of the data tools we use at Excellent Cultures that we've developed over the years is one that will help define the top 10 business systems and processes that are the core of the success of the business. But it's not just about having good systems and processes that accomplish the solution to the problem. The second half of that is, what impact is this get the product to the customer faster system having on our workforce and our employees and our engagement based on how we implement it? So you could have the greatest get the product to the customer faster system in the world, but if how you implement it was making your people frustrated and angry, and you know they're looking for the union representative to stop it, that's not going to help anybody get anywhere. So leaders have got to have, again, the data tools to assess their systems and processes, both in terms of effectiveness and in terms of impact on the ideal culture that they've defined. When you put those two together and modify your systems and processes so that they both solve the problem and build the culture that you want, you've got sustainability in a very, very solid conceptual perspective. A second piece of that puzzle, you know, we learned from Southwest Airlines, who just has an awesome culture. And I'm told by the former VP of HR who, you know, engaged and invented this process, it's about boiling down, you know, the values that are key to the company's success, not to what the executives think are cool or they invented up on a mountain with a consultant and, you know, $100,000 worth of flip chart paper, but how the people who are in the guts of the business, as well as the leaders, can identify values in terms of measurable behaviors. I mean, how many businesses have values? Integrity, customer service, teamwork, great. How do you measure integrity? If you just hired a janitor who came off a work release program in a penitentiary, and you ask them their definition of integrity, it might be something like, well, my roommate stabbed somebody yesterday and I didn't tell. That's probably not the same definition of integrity you want in a bank or a financial services organization, or really any organization other than maybe a gang, in terms of defining a value. But if, and it's not measurable, and warm and fuzzy words are not measurable, and if it's not measurable, there's no accountability, there's no impact for change, there's no ownership, you might as well just stop wasting your time coming up with warm and fuzzy words.
Okay, hold on. There's a lot going on right here. So on a fifth grade level, I'm a fifth grade level. How do we sustain the culture change?
Okay, real simple. You define your values in terms of measurable behaviors. Like, if someone makes a promise to meet you at 3 o'clock and they don't show up and they don't call you, and it happens repetitively, does that tell you something about their integrity? Absolutely. And can you measure it with the number? Absolutely. So it's about boiling down the values and the key components that drive the performance and the culture of the firm into a vital few number of measurable behaviors that everybody in the company participates in creating and can take ownership in.
Right.
Then once it's our idea and people are raising their hand and saying, I think this measurable behavior is important and it's owned, then you simply put 360 reviews in place that give people numeric feedback once a quarter, very simple, not a 30-page long employee engagement survey, one page, 10 or 12 questions that everybody in the place gets feedback on how well am I living
right.
The measurable behavior.
How is that practically played out? What is an Excellent Cultures client left with?
Well,
one of the things I thought you said was key was they're left with people that are equipped. If Steve Gander dies, if all of the experts at Excellent Cultures are all in one plane like a rock band and we're rock stars, and that plane goes down.
We don't do that, by the way.
And die. We don't have a plane. We have a bus. No, I'm just kidding. We don't have that either.
We don't fly everybody on
no,
the same plane.
But if we did and the whole ship goes down and you don't have excellent cultures to call, why does it sustain?
Well, it sustains because, number one, you've got clarification in terms of data, not warm and fuzzy words. Number two, you've got people who know how to change.
Right.
And who want to change and who have experienced the value of making the changes happen that they want to make personally as well as professionally and organizationally. And then you've got clearly defined outcomes of what drives your business that are owned by everybody in the place, not passed down from the top and people nod their head and smile to please the boss.
Right.
You've got accountability in place where you've got, you know, regular measurements of feedback on how well is each
person
in the company living these measurable behaviors.
There you go.
And then you recognize and reward the daylights out of people who do well.
Yep.
And you look at the ones who don't and say, that's okay, you'll do better next quarter.
Yep.
By the third quarter, the good guys are coaching the bad guys on how to do better, and the bad guys are asking for help.
Yep.
And then you've got assessments and tools that measure the effectiveness of whether leaders are causing the outcomes that you want, both in performance and culturally. And it's assessed based upon feedback from the people that they lead and clearly defined actionable behavioral components. And you've got measurement systems in place and coaches that can help the leaders interpret the data and make the changes that they
want to
make.
I think that's the huge point that we should close on. You're left with coaches. You're left with people in your business that are equipped by excellent cultures and empowered by excellent cultures and you to keep the process going in your organization. I don't know of anybody else that does that, that will leave you with people in your organization that will help the sustainment of the process, that they can continue coaching the process because they've been equipped and because they've been empowered by excellent cultures and by you as the business leaders to continue the sustainment of the process.
Well, as part of our resources in our team, we've got some great psychologists and some great scientists. And I don't know where we would be without them. But, I mean, the key is taking that science and, interpreting it through coaches who are business leaders who have run businesses before and who understand the science and can give your leaders in your company real expertise on how to make the changes that they need to make and want to make and measure it with data and then develop coaches inside your own organization that keep it alive and make it happen.
Coaches keep it going. Without the coaches, we got... It's not going to keep going.
Well, that's why our clients get anywhere from 5 to 5,000 fold returns on their investment.
Right, every single one.
Yeah. You know, get those kind of returns on their investment in what they do with excellent cultures is because when you change the culture of a company, you raise the bar so significantly that the numbers follow.
That's it. We're done, guys. We're out of time. We're going to have to close up. Email right now, asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com. And if you need to re-listen to this program again, it's on the podcast at excellentcultures.com or search iTunes, Biz Culture Matters. We'll be with you next week on Clay 1180 AM. This is Biz Culture Matters, signing off.